But right now, we're going to introduce you to Steel City Shakespeare Center. They have a production that's going to be opening on October 4th and will run on the 5th and the 6th, and then on October 11th, 12th, and 13th. It's an adaptation of work by Jane Austen. We'll learn a little bit more about it afterwards. It's called Emma, and we thought we'd open with a scene. Here is Steel City Shakespeare Center.
16 years has Miss Taylor been in the Woodhouse family, less as a governess than as a friend. Between us, it was more the intimacy of sisters. Even before Miss Taylor ceased to hold the nominal office of governess, the mildness of her temper hardly allowed her to impose any restraint upon me. And the shadow of authority being now passed away, we have been living as friend and friend, very mutually attached, with my doing just what I liked, highly esteeming Miss Taylor's judgment, but chiefly directed by my own. Then sorrow came. Miss Taylor married. A gentle sorrow, but not at all in the shape of any disagreeable consciousness. Now my father and myself are left to dine together with no prospect of a third to cheer a long evening. My father has composed himself to sleep after dinner, as usual, and I have then only to sit and think of what I have lost.
Poor Miss Taylor. I wish she were here again. What a pity it is that Mr. Weston ever thought of her.
You, Papa, you know I cannot. Mr. Weston is such a good-humored, pleasant, excellent man that he thoroughly deserves a good wife, and you would not have had Miss Taylor live with us forever and bear all my odd humors when she might have a house of her own.
A house of her own? Bah. Where is the advantage of a house of her own? This is three times as large, and you have never any odd humors, my dear.
How often we shall be going to see them, and they coming to see us. We shall always be meeting. We must begin. We must go and pay our wedding visit very soon.
My dear, how am I to get so far? Randall's is such a distance. I could not walk half so far.
No, Papa, nobody ever thought of your walking. We must go in the carriage, to be sure.
The carriage? But James will not like to put the horses to for such a little way, and where were the horses to be while we pay our visit?
They are to be put into Mr. Weston's stable, Papa. You know we settled all that already. And as for James, you may be sure he will always like going to Randall's because of his daughter's being housemaid there. You got Hannah that good place. Nobody thought of Hannah till you mentioned her. James is obliged to you.
I am very glad I did think of her. It was very lucky for her. I would not want to have poor James think himself slighted upon my account. I am sure she will be an excellent servant, and it will comfort poor Miss Taylor to have somebody there that she is used to see.
I spared no exertions to maintain this happier flow of ideas, and hoped, by the help of playing cards, to get my father tolerably through the evening, to so be attached by no regrets but my own. But a visitor immediately walked in and made it unnecessary. Mr. Knightley. A sensible man, not only a very old friend and intimate of the family, but particularly connected with it, as the older brother of my sister's husband. He was a frequent visitor to Highbury and always welcome, and at times more welcome than usual. Mr. Knightley had a cheerful manner, which always did him good, and I hoped it would help do my father good as well.
It is very kind of you, Mr. Knightley, to come out at this late hour to call upon us. I am afraid you must have had a shocking walk.
Not at all, sir. It is a beautiful moonlit night and so mild that I must draw back from your great fire.
But you must have found it very damp and dirty. I wish you may not catch a cold.
Dirty, sir. Look at my shoes, not a speck on them.
Well, that is quite surprising, for we have had a vast deal of rain here. It rained dreadfully hard for half an hour while we were at breakfast. I wanted them to put off the wedding.
By the by, I have not wished you joy. Being pretty well aware of what sort of joy you both must be feeling, I've been in no hurry with my congratulations. But I hope it all went off tolerably well. How did you all behave? Who cried most?
Oh, poor Miss Taylor. Oh, 'tis a sad business.
Poor Mr. and Miss Woodhouse, if you please, but I cannot possibly say poor Miss Taylor. I have a great regard for you and Emma, but when it comes to the question of dependence or independence... At any rate, it must be better to have only one to please than two.
Especially when one of those two is such a fanciful, troublesome creature. That is what you have in your head, I know, and what you would certainly say if my father were not by.
I believe it is true, my dear. Indeed, I believe I am very fanciful and troublesome sometimes.
My dearest papa, you do not think I could mean you, or suppose Mr. Knightley to mean you? What a horrible idea. Oh, no, I meant only myself. Mr. Knightley loves to find fault with me, you know. In a joke. It is all a joke. We always say what we like to one another.
Emma knows I never flatter her, but I mean no reflection on anybody. Miss Taylor has been used to having two persons to please. She will now have but one. The chances are that she must be a gainer.
Well, you want to hear about the wedding, and I shall be happy to tell you, for we all behaved charmingly. Everybody was punctual, everybody in their best looks, not a tear, and hardly a long face to be seen. Oh, no, we all felt that we were going to be only half a mile apart and were sure of meeting every day.
Dear Emma bears everything so well, but Mr. Knightley, she is really very sorry to lose poor Miss Taylor, and I am sure she will miss her more than she thinks for.
It is impossible that Emma should not miss such a companion. We should not like her so well as we do, sir, if we could suppose it. But she knows how much the marriage is to Miss Taylor's advantage, so she therefore cannot allow herself to feel so much pain as pleasure. Every friend of Miss Taylor must be glad to have her so happily married.
And you have forgotten one matter of joy to me, and a very considerable one, that I made the match myself. I made it, you know, 4 years ago, and not to have it take place and be proved in the right when so many people said Mr. Weston would never marry again may comfort me for anything.
My dear, I wish you would not make matches and foretell things, for whatever you say always comes to pass. Pray, do not make any more matches.
I promise you to make none for myself, Papa, but I must indeed for other people. It is the greatest amusement in the world. And after such success, you cannot, dear Papa, think I shall leave off matchmaking.
I do not understand what you mean by success. Success supposes endeavor. Your time has been properly and delicately spent, if you've been endeavoring for the last 4 years to bring about this marriage. But if, which I rather imagine, your making the match, as you call it, means only you're saying to yourself one idle day, I think it would be a very good thing for Miss Taylor if Mr. Weston were to marry her. And saying it again to yourself every now and then afterwards, why do you talk success? You made a lucky guess, that is all that can be said.
And have you never known the pleasure and triumph of a lucky guess? I pity you. I thought you cleverer, for depend upon it, a lucky guess is never merely luck. There is always talent in it. If I had not promoted Mr. Weston's visits here, it might not have come to anything at all.
A straightforward, open-hearted man like Mr. Weston and a rational, unaffected woman like Miss Taylor may be safely left to manage their own concerns. You are more likely to have done harm to yourself than good to them by interference.
Emma never thinks of herself if she can do good to others. But, my dear, pray do not make any more matches. They are silly things and break up one's family circle grievously.
Only one more, Papa. Only for Mr. Elton. You like Mr. Elton, Papa. I must look about for a wife for him. I thought when he was joining their hands today, he looked so very much as if he would like to have the same kind of office done for him.
Mr. Elton is a very good young man, to be sure, and I have great regard for him. But if you want to show him any attention, my dear, ask him to come to dine with us one day. That will be a much better thing. I dare say Mr. Knightley will be so kind as to meet him.
With a great deal of pleasure, sir, at any time. And I agree with you entirely that it will be a much better thing. Invite him to dinner, Emma, and help him to the best of the fish and the chicken. But leave him to choose his own wife.
Steel City Shakespeare Center, members of the cast of Emma, a Jane Austen adaptation, which opens on October 4th. And just now, you heard several members of the cast. Let me turn to Jessica Cheermeister, who can tell us a little bit about the production and also what we just heard. Hello, Jess.
Hi, Larry.
And first, I'll let you introduce the cast members and the roles they just played.
Sure. So I'm directing the show, and I'm playing Harriet Smith. I'm also in the show, which was not originally the plan, but that's okay.
Oh, you did have a line in that scene.
I didn't.
Oh,
not
okay.
In that one. But
I saw you look up at one point.
Oh,
but,
no.
Oh, no. You didn't. But you will in the next one, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, the next one's one of my scenes. So we also have Julie Schaefer is our Emma. which is a very hefty role. Emma's on stage all the time. She never leaves the stage.
And well, she's very busy making matches.
Yes,
and such,
very
apparently.
Busy being in everyone else's business. We also have AJ Long playing Mr. Knightley. And we have Andrew Wolf playing Mr. Woodhouse, who is Emma's father. And we have not here with us today, but Caitlin Kleiber is playing Frank Churchill. And then Jake Borish, who's also my husband, is playing Mr. Elton.
And he's the one who's going to be matched. So you get to watch your husband be matched, maybe, by Emma. Or
she tries. She tries to set him up with my character, but he's not interested in my character at all.
Interesting. Well, I don't know Jane Austen's work very well. And I know this is based on Jane Austen's work. Can you explain that connection? It may be obvious to some, it is not to me.
Yeah, so it's based off of the novel Emma. And it's severely cut down because it's from a full novel. But our adapter, our playwright, is Dylan Mihaffy. I might have pronounced that wrong. I'm sorry, Dylan, if I pronounced it wrong. But he's also a member of the company, and he's working on adapting the rest of her novels as well for us in the coming years. So Emma was the first one we did, and I'm not totally sure of his process, but I don't envy him. Cutting down a novel to be a 90-minute play seems like a big endeavor.
Well, and just turning it into a play.
I know, yeah.
Let's meet the cast members you heard so far in the role of Mr. Knightley. AJ, can you tell me a bit about yourself, where you're from, and just kind of your background?
Yeah, sure. I moved to Pittsburgh about a year and a half ago, and this would be my third production being in Pittsburgh. I just started acting here last summer, or this summer, come past. So it's cool. Yeah, I moved from Ocean City, Maryland. Moving away from the beach, a lot of people were questioning my motives. But, you know, I had a lot of friends living here. I went to school an hour and a half north of here in Allegheny College. I just figured I'd give myself a shot and see what happens out in the not-so-big city. But maybe I'll get to a bigger city eventually.
Well, that's great. How has Pittsburgh been for you?
Oh, I mean, I love Pittsburgh. So where I'm not from Ocean City directly, but it's easier to say that. I'm from a smaller town. But I like Pittsburgh because, you know, where I live in Shadyside, there's a lot of trees. It has that small town feel. But
sure.
Then 15 minutes away, it's a city. So I'm like, all right, it's pretty cool.
And where near Ocean City are you from?
the town itself is called Berlin.
Oh,
Maryland.
I know where that
is.
So
yeah. If I said Berlin, people would be like, oh, Germany, right? No, it's just in Maryland.
There's one in Pennsylvania, too.
Yeah, I'm sure they're everywhere. But
everywhere, yeah.
I love the small town feel. and I didn't want to move to New York, burn myself out right away, or like LA or anything like that. It's a marathon, you know? We'll see
there
what
you
happens.
Go. Yeah. Well, I'm happy that you found your way
yeah,
here.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's AJ Long. And let's meet Andrew Wolf, who is the role of Mr. Woodhouse. Tell me about yourself.
Hi, I'm Andrew. I've been acting since like sixth grade when I was a security guard in a chorus school concert thing. I've just been doing community theater on and off. I'm from Sarver. I live in Penn Hills with my wife. And yeah.
Excellent. Sarver up in the Allegheny Valley,
yep.
Right? And well, it's good to have you involved. And let's learn more about Julie and your role. Hey, Julie.
Hi, Larry. So I play Emma. I really like her as a character. As we talked about, she has a lot to say. I've been acting for a while. Since I was 15, I got into it, into community theater. I've lived in southwestern Pennsylvania my whole life and moved to Pittsburgh. This is my third year in the city. So I'm really enjoying it so far. There's a lot more acting opportunities, obviously, in the city, and I'm really grateful to be with Steel City Shakespeare. Have met a lot of great people and am very pleased with the production so far. And also very happy to be here with you all at the Saturday Light Brigade. So.
Great. And then finally, you haven't heard from him yet dramatically, but you will in a moment. We have Jake Borish, who is Mr. Elton. Hello, Jake.
Hi, Larry.
How are you today?
I'm well.
What kind? Well, where are you from?
I'm from Strabane, Pennsylvania.
Excellent. Nice. You guys represent the region really well. And when did you start acting?
I haven't done a lot of acting as an adult. I did some things when I was a kid, and I sort of stopped in high school, and I'm happy to be getting back into it.
Excellent. Now, we're going to have another scene. I want to be sure people know that the play opens on October 4th. It's at Provident Charter School, Provident Charter School on Troy Hill. It will run the 4th, 5th, and 6th of October, and then the 11th, 12th, and 13th. We've linked to Steel City Shakespeare Center's Facebook page and website, so you can get additional information. We're going to get our other scene in, but this is our last chance to talk. Are there some other things that we might want to mention, Jess?
I just want to talk a little bit about our mission. So our mission statement says that we use classical theater to engage and inspire communities. And basically what that means is that these stories have stood the test of time because people can still relate to them today. So as our name implies, we tend to do Shakespeare more often. This is our second production of a Jane Austen adaptation. We want to bring these plays to people who might not otherwise have the opportunity to see them. So we use few props and stage pieces so that we can be more portable. And we also rely on donations. So we do not have an official admission fee. So even if you're unable to pay, you're welcome to come see our productions. Our website is steelcityshakespeare.org. We are also on Facebook and Instagram. And we just want to thank Provident Charter School for their accommodations and letting us use their spaces.
Here comes now another scene from Steel City Shakespeare Center's production of Emma. Is there any need to set this up at all?
This is the first time my character, Harriet Smith, enters, and she is sort of a, what do you want to call her, a protege of Emma's, Emma tries to set her up.
A busybody in training.
Yeah.
Or a matchmaker, matchmaker in training. Well, here we go. Once again, Steel City Shakespeare Center and the cast of Steel City Shakespeare Center's upcoming production of Emma. We have another scene.
Harriet Smith is a very pretty girl of the sort I particularly admire. She has a look of great sweetness, and I am as much pleased with her manners as her person. The acquaintances she has formed at Goddard's school are unworthy of her, in particular the family of Martin, with whom she recently parted, and whom I know by character as renting a large farm of Mr. Knightley. Mr. Knightley thinks highly of them, but they must be coarse and unpolished, and very unfit to be the intimates of a girl who wanted only a little more knowledge and elegance to be quite perfect. So I have taken it upon myself to detach Harriet from her bad acquaintance and introduce her into society. Certainly a very kind undertaking.
He had gone 3 miles round one day in order to bring me some walnuts because he said he recalled how fond I was of them, and in everything else he is very obliging. He invited his shepherd's son into the parlor one night to sing. Oh, I was very fond of it as well. Mr. Martin is very clever and understands everything. Everyone speaks well of him. His mother and sisters are very fond of him. Oh, Mrs. Martin told me one day that it is impossible for anybody to be a better son, and therefore she was sure he would make a good husband. Not that she wants him to marry. She is in no hurry at all.
Mr. Martin, I suppose, is not a man of information beyond the line of his own business. He does not read.
Oh, yes. That is, no. Well, I do not know, but I believe he has read a good deal, but not what you would think anything of. He reads agricultural reports and some other books, but he reads all of them to himself. Sometimes of an evening he would read something aloud out of Elegant Extracts, very entertaining. He never reads The Romance of the Forest, nor The Children of the Abbey. He never heard of such books before I mentioned them, but he is determined to get them now as soon as ever he can.
We happened upon Mr. Martin the very next day as we were walking on the Donwell Road. I was not sorry to have such an opportunity of survey, and walked a few yards forward as they talked together, and soon made my quick eye sufficiently acquainted with Mr. Robert Martin.
Only think of our happening to meet him. How very odd. It was quite a chance he said that he had even gone by Randall's. He has not been able to get The Romance of the Forest yet. He was so busy the last time he was at Kingston that he quite forgot it, but he goes again tomorrow. Well, Miss Woodhouse, is he like you expected? What do you think of him? Do you think him so very plain?
He is very plain, undoubtedly. Remarkably plain. But that is nothing compared with his entire want of gentility. I had no right to expect much, but I had no idea he could be so very clownish, so totally without air. I had imagined him, I confess, a degree or two nearer gentility.
To be sure, he is not as genteel as real gentlemen.
I think, Harriet, since your acquaintance with us, you have been repeatedly in the company of some such very real gentleman, that you must be struck with the difference in Mr. Martin. At Hartfield, you have had very good specimens of well-educated, well-bred men. Were you not then struck by Mr. Martin's awkward look and abrupt manner, and the uncouthness of a voice which I heard to be wholly unmodulated as I stood there?
Certainly he is not like Mr. Knightley. He has not such a fine air and way of walking. I see a difference plain enough, but Mr. Knightley is so very fine a man.
Mr. Knightley's air is so remarkably good that it is not fair to compare Mr. Martin to him. But he is not the only gentleman you have been lately used to. What say you to Mr. Weston and Mr. Elton? Compare Mr. Martin with either of them. You must see the difference.
Oh, yes, there is a great difference. But Mr. Weston is almost an old man. Mr. Weston must be between 40 and 50.
Which makes his good manners the more valuable. The older a person grows, the more important it is that their manners should not be bad. What is passable in youth is detestable in later age. Mr. Martin is now awkward and abrupt. What will he be at Mr. Weston's time of life?
There is no saying indeed.
But there may be good guessing. He will be a completely gross, vulgar farmer, totally inattentive to appearances and thinking of nothing but profit and loss.
Will he indeed? That will be very bad.
How much his business engrosses him already is very plain from the circumstance of his forgetting to inquire for the book you recommended. He was a great deal too full of the market to think of anything else, which is just as it should be for a thriving man. What has he to do with books? And I have no doubt that he will thrive and be a very rich man in time, but his being illiterate and coarse need not disturb us.
I wonder he did not remember the book.
In one respect, perhaps Mr. Elton's manners are superior to Mr. Knightley's or Mr. Weston's. He is neither as open as Mr. Weston or as commanding as Mr. Knightley. But Mr. Elton is good-humored, cheerful, obliging, and gentle. He seems to me to be grown particularly gentle of late. It strikes me that his manners are softer than they used to be. If he means anything, it must be to please you. Did I not tell you that only the other day he told me how agreeable he finds you?
Truly. Well, I have always found Mr. Elton very agreeable as well.
Thank you to Steel City Shakespeare Center, and look for the production opening October 4th. Thank you, cast. And,
Thank you.
Good luck. Break all the legs and everything else.